transformations of quantum networks. It's from the Quantum Information Theory Group at the University College and the Studio by Pavia.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you. And since I'm the last speaker of the whole conference, I would like to thank all the organizers and people here at PI for giving to all of us the opportunity of attending this beautiful conference and to enjoy discussions with people here. So okay, what I'm going to speak is about not really a single work that we did in Pavia, but a kind of research line that we pushed in the last year or so, year and one half. So maybe it would be a kind of rhapsody jumping from one theme to another, but I think I will keep some global overview, even though maybe the single results would be faster instead. So I hope you will anyway enjoy it. So this presentation is divided in three parts. So part one is a mathematical physics part. So it starts from a definition of a mathematical object, from an abstract definition, and then we prove a circuitry realization of the object we define. The second part is moving toward quantum information. So it's about how to describe this structure in terms of operator in a way that is useful for optimization problems in quantum information. And the third, that Hussein is convinced you that what we did was not just wasting time, is about applications in concrete quantum information problems like optimal networks for estimation, multi-round alignment of reference frame, and universal cloning of unitary gates. Okay, so let's start about quantum operations. You all probably know that quantum operations are the most general evolution a quantum state can undergo. That means the most general state transformations taking states of a Hilbert into space to states of input Hilbert space to an output Hilbert space. And there are some operational requirements that we should ask on this transformation that are linearity, complete positivity, and phase non-increasing property. Linearity, of course, since we want that convex combination of input states are mapped to convex combination of their output states. Complete positivity, since we want probabilities to be positive, even in experiment where we apply our black box, our transformation on part of a bipartite input state. So if we do this and then we measure, we want the probability coming out of this scheme to be positive. And this is the operational reason of complete positivity. Phase non-increasing, since probabilities must be upper bounded by one, and of course. And trace preserving maps are what are called the deterministic quantum operation, namely quantum channels. There is an important theorem about this that is the realization of quantum operation as open system evolution. And the theorem is this, so you can interpret any of this quantum operation in this way as the trace of an environment of this evolved state which started in a decoupled state between system and environment, and then possibly a measurement on the environment if the transformation is probabilistic. So this result is due to Steinspring originally in the mathematical literature, then Krauss for probabilistic quantum operations, and then Ozawa for quantum measurements, for the whole quantum measurement process. The meaning of this is just that applying the evolution to an input state is equal to taking the input state, tensoring with the state of the environment, evolving jointly the system, and then measuring the environment, post-selecting an outcome, possibly. Trace decreasing corresponds to this post-selection of an outcome of the environment. Trace preserving, namely channel, corresponds to the case in which the environment is discarded. Okay, our mathematical question was this. So quantum operations are the most general transformation of states. Which are the most general transformations of quantum operations in quantum mechanics? So we can place some operational requirements also in this case. So first of all, they must be linear supermaps mapping quantum operations on some input and output Hilbert spaces to quantum operations on some possibly different input and output Hilbert spaces. So they must be linear for the very same reason as before. If you have a convex mixture of input, you want to get back the convex mixture of output. So in a cartoon version of this, you have an input quantum operation that you want to send to some kind of device. This is a black box implementing this, this super map. So you send your input operation to the device. So it takes it, it scrambles it in some way, and then it sends out a transformed operation. Okay. So let's become more serious. So I will give a diagrammatic representation of supermap in this way, like a kind of, I don't know what, this kind of diagram. So this is a supermap. So you just plug in the input operation, and what you get is the output operation. This is the meaning of the diagram. More, in this diagram, it's simple to express what is the analog of complete positivity in this case. So we want these supermaps to be completely positive preserving. That means that if we have a bipartite operation with a bipartite structure of input and output systems, we want to be able to transform locally also only on one part of the bipartite quantum operation, getting a legitimate quantum operation also in this case. That means that if you prepare an input state here and you measure an effect here, what you get must be a positive probability in every possible case. Just keep track of the colors that have some meaning anyway. So this is, you can think of this kind of old-fashioned phone thing as an effect over supermaps in some sense. Okay. So this is a supermap, and we can consider the case of, so they must be also normalization on increasing, since probabilities are upper bounded by one. And the deterministic ones are those that map channels into channels, the probabilistic ones are mapping the channels into phase decreases in quantum operation. So then there is a little result that we found, that is a realization theorem for this quantum in terms of quantum networks. So any admissible supermap, so like this, can be realized physically by this circuit in this circuit model. So you have a pre-processing channel here. Then you apply the input variable operation, and then you put this post-processing channel. You connect the wires with the quantum memory here, and possibly you trace out on a final ancilla. So of course, if you post select, you get a probabilistic supermap. If you just discard the ancilla, you get a deterministic one.
So excuse me. Sorry. So given your previous characterization of channels, then that C0, C1 are just unitaries.
If you want, you can iterate the thing and put here unitaries and then trace what you want to trace. Exactly. So this is a kind of size frame theorem for supermaps.
Are these supermaps always linear?
Yes, by definition. I mean, you okay. may consider a more general thing, but in this case, by definition, they are linear. For this probabilistic interpretation of sending mixtures to mixtures,
let me also, if you go back to your definition, it's the analog of complete positivity. So,
Sorry. The bad thing with animation is for then. But you may like to see it again.
Okay, this is right here. One might have imagined a different generalization, or at least ostensibly different, but maybe it boils down to the same thing. Instead of adding an extra input up there, it does boil down. You go on. That is general, isn't it?
Sorry?
That is generalism.
I would say yes.
That's the direct analog of taking one half of an entangled system and putting it through a map.
Yeah, I think, for instance, to test the complete positivity for maps, you need to just apply on a max on a Bell state.
Okay.
I think here, in terms of operation, the analog of a Bell state should be like a C naught or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Sorry, you put here a C naught. Or not, sorry, a swap. a swap operator between this and this, this and that. So, okay, can I ignore this? so this is so I think. Okay, we can, you could keep going here. So you can, once you have the realization of supermaps, or when you have the concept of supermap, you can start of doing supermaps of supermaps, the transformer like supermaps, and so on and so on. So you can define recursively an infinite hierarchy of transformations. So an admissible N map is an admissible transformation that maps N minus 1 maps into quantum operations. And same requirement, so linear, complete positive preserving, normalization on increasing. And okay, the deterministic one has to map all N minus 1 maps into channels. Also in this case, there is a circuit realization of these maps. There is a theorem, any map of this kind can be realized by a sequential network of quantum channels with memory, possibly formed by a measurement of the Ancilla. And this is basically the cartoon for this. So if you have an input quantum network that you n minus 1 map, is the, and you always realize it this way, the most general transformation of this object into a quantum operation is a thing like this. Quite, I would say almost obvious. It's the first thing you can imagine, but the important thing is this is the most general thing you could possibly imagine consistently with quantum mechanics. An interesting particular case, which is just a particular case, but it's, we just gave a different name for this since it's as an interest in its own, is the case in which we have an N map sending N minus 1 maps into just probabilities. So probabilities are a particular case of quantum operations, just with the input and output space of dimension 1. So it may look as a silly way of thinking the probabilities, but here it helps. And so we have the analog of the concept of POVM for quantum networks. If you want to measure this network with a POVM, you can just put a set here of probabilistic n maps with the trivial input and output spaces. And this is the most general probability rule for quantum networks. So you can define the analog of POVM for quantum networks. You can define measurements over networks in this way. And all these measurements have this realization. End of part one. So the summary of this is that in quantum mechanics, the only admissible N maps are the obvious one, the sequential networks of quantum operations, or also sequences of memory channels, which is actually our generous grant, our generous European grant that is paying for part of this work. And another report. So an open question, an open window on foundations is whether this property is generic for every probabilistic theory, so namely whether this is true by definition of what we meant by supermap, or is this somehow a kind of simplicity of quantum mechanics, that all this crazy hierarchy just collapses to sequences of channels. So we discovered that all that matters is just concatenation of channels of quantum operation and their interlinking. So the aim of the next part is just to provide an efficient treatment of in quantum mechanics of these things, of networks and their interlinking. What is useful in dealing with quantum operations is the Chai representation. Actually, so this is a convenient representation for linear maps, not necessary for channels. Yeah?
Can you divide the N map again? So, for example, the two map you're saying it will map a super operator to just quantum operators?
Two map is the first super map I showed. So, you may remember, so the number N is just the number of quantum operations in the net, in the sequence. So, a two map has two blocks and a hole inside.
Okay, but they're all still super operators.
Sorry?
They're all super operators.
Yeah, they are all an increasing hierarchy of super operators.
Well, no, wait a minute. You said an N map maps quantum operations
a one. This would be a two map.
Two maps, plot of operations.
So I started with this super map,
yeah.
That is what in the next definition would be a two map, a two admissible two map.
Okay.
And a three map would be just maybe.
So
make sure we understand.
Sorry?
What's a three map?
Is a network with the three interactions. Two walls and three things. So that's why three maps. So with N is the same.
And it doesn't map super operator to quantum operation. Because
at the end of the day, everything is super operator,
no,
in some super linear thing.
I don't know. Is it fair to say it maps two quantum operations to one quantum operation?
In some sense, yes. I would prefer to say that they are mapping. I see. You are saying somehow something more than I was saying. Since you say there are two holes, so it is a binary map. With the two arguments. But to treat really this thing, if you don't allow connectivity also outside, it's very difficult. It's an interesting problem, but it's very difficult. What we treated is the case in which you allow this to be remotely connected, and then everything becomes three. So I would prefer to say that a three map transforms this kind of network into a channel.
Right? Transforms a two map.
Sorry?
That's one of the two
maps. Yeah, this one. Yeah, that's the way I expected it before. Yeah, okay. So are you all fine with
this? New terminology.
Yeah. Okay, so the Chai-Jemirovsky operator in infinite dimension is related to Belapkin and Stasievsky. Okay, it's defined like this. You apply, so the Chai operator E is the map, apply tensor the identity. So this should be the identity map, sorry, it's a misprint. Apply it to the maximum entangled state, and I prefer taking not normalized states here. So there is a cartoon also for this. In the next video with this max is that there is a cartoon for everything. So this is the Chai-Jemirovsky operator. So you take a bipartite state, you apply the quantum operation, and then you get this. So technically, this is a map from Lin. A map of this form is mapped on an operator over these two Hilbert spaces. So H out here and H in here. The map is completely positive if and only if the operator is positive. Then we need, since we care about connections, we need a notation to describe the connections of Choi operators. So we care about connection, and we care about Choi operators. Hence, we need a notation to describe this connection. And that is what we call the link product. This is a kind of tensor contraction of Choi operators. So the meaning of this symbol, the link product, when you have a space, Hilbert spaces in common, is just that if you extend any operator on the Hilbert spaces where they don't act, basically, trivially, and then you trace the spaces where they have in common by also partially tracing this. And this is also equal to taking the tensor of the two operators and applying the projector onto the maximally entangled state on the wires that you connect. There is also a cartoon for this. So if you have these two quantum operations, the operation of connecting them is equal in terms of Chai-Jemirovsky operator of having the two Chai-Jemirovsky states and just by projecting on the maximally entangled state here on this side. Okay. If you don't care about permuting or Hilbert spaces on the paper you are writing, you can even say that this product is commutative. Okay. So it's fun also to rewrite known formulas in terms of this link product. So it encompasses the tensor product of states, since these are different Hilbert spaces, so you get this. But also the Born statistical formula, so the trace of rho with p is equal to this link product, and also the transformation of states. So here you see the quantum operation applied to the state is just the link of these two Chai-Jemirovsky operators. Which is somehow fun, since states and transformations are treated on the same footing. So we may like also to ask philosophical questions whether you call something a state or a transformation. This basically depends on the convenience of in the context of you are speaking, basically. But it's useful also to have this argument-free way of writing things, just connecting the choice operators. Okay, so now that we have choice operator of quantum operation and the link product, we can easily write down the choice operator of a network is just this big link product. And you can also define the choice operator of a supermap acting on this, on a tester acting on this. It does this. And then you have defined these two operators for that represent the two networks. And the probabilities in all experiments are this by this Born rule for testers, that is just the link product of these two networks. So notice that in any possible experiment, the probabilities only depend on the total choice operator of the whole network and not on this on what happens on this connected wires. So you may possibly rotate here the input and rotate back here. So there are many different networks that have the same Choi-Yamankowski operator. And in some sense, this means that the Choi-Yamankowski operator is more fundamental than the whole description of the network, in some sense. So that's why we define a kind of formal object, just a diagram, to mean the same thing that was before. So we call this quantum concept. This is this diagram that represent an equivalence class of sequential networks with a number of the input spaces using this sequence. And the quantum NCOM is just this equivalence class. And it totally represents what you can do with this class, equivalence class of networks. So you can speak about deterministic and probabilistic comms. And for deterministic comms, you can characterize the normalization with a recursive sequence of partial traces and identities that in the standard notation is written this way, but it becomes much nicer, I think, with the link product, since partial trace and identity are the same in this notation. And okay, and you can characterize everything in terms of operators. And the credit for this is also for Gutowski and Wolters that found this structure before we came up with this paper, in remarkably different concepts in describing strategies in quantum games. So they wanted to find this description of a one-player strategy in a quantum game, and they find exactly the same equation. Of course, you may say now, since everything boils down to connecting the networks, and the player are with their networks. So you can write these equations also for testers. You just have a collection of operators which sum up to some operator that I denote here with this, like the average operator. You have a Born rule for these testers. And you have a decomposition theorem for these testers that you can split every tester in two parts. So there is first a deterministic map transforming the network into a state. And that deterministic map that has this form is just with cross operators that are the square roots of the average T. And then with the ordinary POVM measurement on the output state. Have you got this? This is very important. It's simple, but it's a very important thing for the developments that I will speak of later. And then, due to this decomposition theorem, you can also define an operational distance between quantum networks, which is given by the sup over all these operators of this, this should be trace norm one, is just the distance between the two output states of this supermap, from network to quantum state, on these plots of Hilbert spaces.
Sure.
Yep.
Can you repeat what the decomposition theorem is?
So you have a tester that is a probability rule for networks, and you can think of this as, so this probability rule is Born rule trace with the tester operator with the Choi-Yamankowski operator of the network. This is equal to the Born rule in terms of QVM, ordinary QVM for state, for this state. So this state is this is a quantum state, a normalized quantum state obtained just by transforming the Choi operator of the network into a quantum state with this map. It's kind of a square root thing.
And sorry, expectation value of t.
I'm afraid I'm running a little bit over time, but yes.
In that case, I'll ask later.
No, if it's not clear, it's better to make it this clear and just to
put the implications. Expectation value of t operator?
What is this?
What's the definition of that?
That you have this tester, this set of operators, and you sum them. So you don't get the identity for networks. You get an operator that I like to call this way, just since for covariant tester is a group error. That's only the reason. Actually, I called this one in this talk. In the papers, it's called another way. Okay. So very fast run through the applications. First application is optimal gate estimation when you have n copies of the gate at disposal. Suppose that you have an unknown quantum gate with the promise that this is an element of a group, UG. So you have n black boxes. You don't know the black box. You would like to know what's the best estimate of this parameter G. Okay, this is what I said. So finding the best estimate. Examples are quantum interferometry that correspond to the group U1 of A, otherwise estimation of rotation, SO3, and full gate estimation, SO2. You may do this with the parallel architecture, so you can use all the boxes you have in parallel on an input state, on a giant multipartite input state, and then apply a giant multiparty QVM. So you get the probability, an estimate. This case is kind of easy to treat. The solution is known in general, so for phase estimation is in this work, for rotation we did some years ago, and in the general case also we did, at least we wrote the optimal scheme. But we can also consider sequential architectures where we use the gates at disposal one after one other. But in this case, there is no known solution. And then we can also consider hybrid architectures when you use some copies in parallel, some in same sequence, and then you can do something in the NEMA. It's very hard to optimize this. The only example we knew was this work by Fandan, Diano Eckert, Machiavello, and Michele Mosca. This is also quite recent work. They did this for phase estimation. So with the optimal testers, this becomes kind of trivial. So this is somehow the power of the formalism. So we have this at disposal. We want to find the best probability rule for estimation, that is this tester. So we can write the choice operator of the unknown measure at the network, that is this just this tensor. The tester for the measuring network, which is a covariant one, is something technical, but just let me write it this way. It's just a fixed operator rotated by unitaries. And the normalization, the t average, is just this integral, which happens to commute in the case of groups, of course. So it commutes with this group representation. So we can prove that parallel strategies are optimal just by using the decomposition theorem. Everything we can do is just measuring on this output state that is obtained by this average operator. But the average operator commutes, so you can bring out all these unitaries. And this is what you get, actually, by applying the unitaries on a big parallel, in parallel on a big state. So this is the proof. And for any group, the parallel architecture achieves the optimum among all possible estimates. So you can consider also the case of reference frame. So you can encode a direction in a quantum gyroscope, a spin 1/2 particle. So you may use it as a reference for direction. If you have more than one qubit, you can encode the whole reference frame, so a Cartesian frame in this way. And the question is how to align the axis of two different parties, Alice and Bob. So they are far apart. They have different Cartesian frames that are mismatched. There is an unknown rotation that connects Alice axis with the Bob axis. And they want to figure out which is the best way. Possible ways to prepare a multi-party input state. Just send the state from Alice to Bob. Bob can measure the state and then align the axis accordingly. So the problem here was finding the optimal quantum state and the optimal estimation strategy. With the notion of cost function, so we found the best scaling in the case of parallel schemes. But you may ask also what's the best way of aligning using more than one round of quantum communication. So you can try to do in many rounds. So that's the idea. So Alice can prepare states, sending the state to Bob. Bob can do something, align, and send back what he has. And they can continue doing this for a while, also communicating with an unbounded amount of classical communication. Since now is Christmas time and every telephone company is offering an unbounded amount of classical communication for you. So they can try to do now, a special offer, they can try to do and find the best alignment. And it's not clear a priori that what we found 4 years ago was the best. But it becomes kind of trivial in the quantum comp formulation. So whatever they can do, Alice network is described by this comb. What Bob can do is just to perform a tester, just to decide the alignment of his axis. So you have Alice moves described in her description by a tester. In Bob's description, the comb is this, is rotated by the unknown rotation on the systems that fly from Alice to Bob, and by the conjugate rotation by a system that fly in the opposite direction. But for rotations, you know that these two representations are equal, so it's somehow you are rotating the whole particles. So the estimation is given by a covariant tester. You use the decomposition to find the best. And also in this case, you see that you can parallelize everything, and the only thing that matters is the total number of rotational non-invariant qubits that traveled from Alice to Bob, and vice versa. So you can do everything in a single round without classical communication. So I think 5 minutes, a lot, I expected less.
Well, actually 3 now.
Okay.
Holding it up for 2 minutes.
Okay, so another nice question you can try to tackle with this formalism is the cloning of quantum transformations. So what does it mean to clone a transformation? If you are not familiar, it could be a strange idea. So it means just to use the corresponding black box only once within a quantum network that simulates two independent uses of the same black box on a bipartite system. That means that you use only one, but you would like to do something which is like using twice. You put in the super map, and what comes out should be
without shaking.
Sorry? Without shaking, and sorry, it was lazy, I didn't want to copy it. Okay. So you can find with this formalism the best network. The preprocessing interaction is a controlled swap, which is kind of natural, since you don't know, you have only one copy, you don't know where to apply it. So the best you can do is to parallelize this, to superpose the two choices. And then you have post-processing, an extension of the universal cloning of pure state. I know this may sound technical, just don't care. You can find the optimal fidelity. So you can find that with the quantum cloning, you can get much better than with the estimation of the non-transformation. You may also ask whether this cloning is just cloning of maximally entangled states, since there is a one-to-one correspondence between unitary transformations and maximally entangled states. So you may ask whether it's possible to apply this on a maximally entangled state, use the optimal cloning, and then try to retrieve the true boxes. The answer is no. This is a strictly suboptimal strategy. Since in some sense, when you apply this on a known input state, you are degrading the computational power of this transformation, and so you get suboptimal. There are other applications, like optimal storing and retrieving of quantum gates, optimal programming, and analysis of multi-round quantum gates, that was the motivation of work by Gutowski and Waters. And another thing you may try to do is information disturbance trade-off for quantum transformation. So I finish. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much. Any more questions?
You need some paper?
No. So one of the things I like about this is it seems to give you a framework for getting a handle on the question of cloning operations.
Yeah.
So I prepared my question before you got to that section.
Wow.
But nonetheless, I'll offer it to you. So you know that you can't clone a completely unknown state.
Mm-hmm.
But suppose I've promised to you that the system I've given you is one of two non-orthogonal states.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask you, with that extra information, is there anything that you can do that will clone the unknown state? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. Because they're not orthogonal, even providing the extra information won't allow you to build some device that will do perfect coding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But suppose I give you a black box and promise you that it's one of two unitary operations, either U0 or U1. That extra information will allow you to code the unitary.
It could be. No,
well,
no.
Well, it does.
It may happen.
It does.
Not for any Kaplan.
For any, so if I give you the promise that it's either U0 or U1, and I tell you that I did which one I'm talking about, mm-hmm. then I can find some input state into the unitary, such that it evolves one way under one unitary, one way under the other unitary, and they're orthogonal.
Mm-hmm.
So then I can distinguish the black boxes,
mm-hmm.
and then simply make two copies
and
hand it back. How do you see that fall out of?
It's nice about the
Knot-Lorentz kind of
theorem. You can prove the Knot-Lorentz theorem in a completely general framework, independently from the fact that you are speaking of states of transformation or of whatever, and that you are speaking of quantum mechanics, classical mechanics, and any theory. You can show this equivalence that two objects can be cloned if and only if the probability of distinguishing between the two objects is either zero, the minimum error probability is either zero or one alpha. So either you can perfectly distinguish the two objects in the general theory,
and then you can clone.
And then you can clone it by the meaning that you said, just that I distinguish and then I clone.
But it's funny, the formalism makes the question of cloning quantum states and the question of cloning quantum operations look so identical.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have thought I would find the ingredients at all.
And which differences are there?
Two non-orthogonal states cannot be cloned, but two non-orthogonal unitaries can be cloned.
But it's the concept of orthogonality that I think should be refined. Two perfectly distinguishable operations.
Yes, distinguishability is the crucial.
It happens for qubits that distinguishability for qubits and only for qubits, that the distinguishability and orthogonality in Hilbert Schmidt norm do coincide. But this is only for qubits or for unitaries.
It's not really true that you can distinguish any two unitaries, right? I mean, what if one is a very small rotation and the other is identity? You can't tell them apart.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that's right. There's a large class that you can.
Okay.
With a sufficient number of copies,
with a sufficient number of copies, you always can.
Well, that's correct.
But
you
need
one.
That's right. It's not any two. But certainly for non-orthogonal ones.
Okay.
There's generally the case.
Yeah,
that
you for
instance,
for
cubits,
you can find orthogonal and perfectly distinguishable unitaries.
The main thing is that it's in product, it's not the crucial issue, it's distinguishing other fields.
Only for cubits.
Any more questions?
Yeah. So, am I right if I say, if I want to clone a unitary, I would say optimally? You said that there is not such a correspondence with cloning. States in a sense, not so trivial, but I could send a apply it on half of a maximum entangled state, then clone that thing, and then in that case, the optimal cloning of that state would give the optimal cloning of the unit?
No. So this was the original I wanted exactly to say this. So if you do this,
The original state is max, and I find the unit not on a general row.
If you can't with the general rule, in particular case, you can't not even with the maximum entangled.
Okay.
Yeah. It's strictly suboptimal. And it's suboptimal, I mean, it happens that the best you can do by applying the unitary on a given state, on the best state, is just estimating the unitary. So there is a power in the dimension. The difference is the power of fidelity. One is one over D squared, the other is 1 over D, 4. So it's a huge difference for big dimensions.
Okay. Let's think. So can you tell, it seems like if you apply a unitary to a maximum entangled state, all the information that was in the unitary is now in entangled state.
Mm-hmm.
So what gives? I mean, is it the configuration of the information that prevents
So the one-to-one mathematical correspondence is not always a one-to-one physical correspondence in terms of resources. So you can write down the Chojo-Markowski thing that I wrote. You can write the cartoon either in one direction or in the other. But physically, there is a normalization that waves between the two things. And so you can do by probabilistic by teleportation scheme, but it's conditioned by two single.
Many thanks.